Justin, I'm changing my life. I'm modeling my life after you a little bit, to be honest.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's good.
Okay.
No, I'm happier.
Okay. Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
Two things. Thing one, I have become addicted to Baja Blast.
No, the Taco Bell is here. No.
Yeah, I like soda, but I don't drink it that often. But was this last week or was this 2 weeks ago?
It was
like,
recent.
What are you drinking there?
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm having a Baja Blast. And you're like, oh, cool.
It was
and
like
I
was a like, small
my
one,
first
too.
One ever.
It was like a small one. Yeah.
It was 2 weeks ago. And I was like, this is my first one ever. And you're like, what? I think that happened before we started recording. You know, we talked about it a little bit. And then it was sort of like sitting on the mind. And then I had another one because like 2 days later, because I was like, I gotta fucking try that again. That was
like,
crazy.
Did you go to Taco Bell or buy the kid?
I did.
Okay. Okay.
I did. I went to Taco Bell. I picked one up on the way home from the gym. And then I was like, I'm potentially interested in purchasing some of these so I don't have to keep going to Taco Bell. And so I went to the grocery store and they were selling, it was buy two, get one in terms of cases of cans. And I was like, well, I'm not going to pass up a deal. I'm not going to pass up a deal.
Quick timeout. Do you remember when that used to be like $5 to
it was depressing.
Yeah. Now it's like 15 probably.
It was 20 and then plus tax. Bad. Dude, I know.
But, yeah, you know.
But I got one free. You know what I mean? So, like, hey, let's take that. So now I have 30 cans in the house and I have one every single day.
Oh, that's restraint.
It is. It's because, and the reason I'm only having one is because the caffeine will kind of fuck me up. So I have to be like, I have it at like 10 a.m.
Yeah,
you and caffeine
are not friends with each other.
No. So I have to have it early, yeah. And I have to have it when I know that I have like some food in me. So I've been having it at like 10 a.m. Because I can't do it at dinner because otherwise I'm just not going to sleep. So that's one way I've been sort of, again, modeling my life after you, my role model.
Caffeine.
But the other way is, as you can see here, there's a new piece of the episode document underneath the Justin hot dog count for 2025. The Peter Hunt Spitzek hot dog count of 2025. I'm at 16 right now. I'm doing two hot dogs every single day for lunch. I'm doing turkey dogs with those keto friendly buns, like the low calorie buns. And then I'm just topping those things with pickles, zero calories, tomatoes, which are like negligible because mostly water,
right?
A little bit of mustard.
Yeah.
I'm living right now.
That sounds delicious. I also do a little onion is what I add to that too.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, a little
onion,
get a little of that crunch. I am proud of you. And I'm going to tell you something. You're going to catch up with me quicker than I think you're going to expect.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, I ate 8 since our last podcast. I'm at 70.
Gotcha. Yes, I'm going to be getting there. Because I did not have 16 this week. I've had 4.
Sure.
Well, dude, I'm keeping with the numbers. And also, those buns are expensive.
They are. It does limit it a little bit. They're what, like $5.99 or something like that for 8?
Yeah. It was the sort of thing where I was going to buy 2 because have you ever noticed this? No one's ever commented on this, that they sell you 8 hot dogs.
Yep.
Or maybe 10
hot dogs
only 8
and 8
buns.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how they get you. A big bun will do it. And yeah. I was like, I'm not about to spend $10 on hot dog buns. So I didn't.
So I kind of plan my week on having the amount of hot dog buns that I get. And then sometimes like my wife will have one and she's free to have anything that I purchase in the house, but then it just messes up my math. So then I take
a
piece of Wonder Bread that I have and I just roll the hot dog around it. And that's what I have to do sometimes.
That's what they do in Australia. It's called a snag.
Yeah. I snag it daily. You know what I mean?
Dude, that sounds pretty good. It's like a snag. When you explained it, we talked about it on the podcast. When you explained it to me, you were like, I have 2 hot dogs every single day. And I was like, Justin, are you sick? Are you okay? And you were like, it's for like, you know, calorie counting, conscious eating. And I was like, what? Like, and as you were explaining it to me, I went from being like, Justin's a madman to being like, Justin's a madman.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, he figured it out.
I also know that I'm eating healthy when I eat those and they're the most delicious thing ever.
Yeah.
if I'm particularly eating unhealthy, like here's a look into my life. We have a cookie cake in our house this weekend.
Oh, you know, it's the best.
Man,
it's the
I'm
best.
Telling you. So nowadays I come over for lunch and I'm like, cookie cake, a hot dog. And then I usually try the cookie cake first while it's heating up in the microwave. Mind you, 30 seconds is the amount of time it takes in the microwave. But then I like eat the hot dog. I'm like, I don't feel like this is hitting the right way anymore.
Our dear friend Josh got me a hot dog toaster.
Oh,
a long time ago. not that long, but long enough that I have tried to use it once.
Seen the buns on top?
So it'll... So you can do, there's a slot for the buns, but I don't want to like, I'm not a fan of like opening the bun up all the way because then it falls apart.
Yeah.
So I'm not doing those, but there's like two slots for two hot dogs that just go directly down. And I've tried to use it in the past, but I tried to put Italian sausage in there and it was too girthy to sort of fit. In the hole.
Too many juices we weren't expecting in there.
And then, correct, yeah. Yes. And then it did necessitate me to take it apart so I could clean it. it was a whole sort of thing. But I was so excited when I realized, because I was just cooking them on the stove, and I filled my entire apartment up with smoke because I like them charred, and I really didn't want the fire detector to go off. So I was like, oh, shit, I got a toaster for this specifically. So yeah, man, I'll keep you updated on how I'm doing. But so far, four in, you know, two days in, and I'm living.
It truly is a perfect lunch snack because I like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but like I got ruined on eating them for lunch. Now it's like a luxury item that I get sometimes because when I was a kid, I had them every day. But like you need a lunch, and like then when I first got to live on my own, I would start making meals for myself, and then it was just like too much food.
Yeah.
Like I'd be eating like, you know, a 1,000-calorie lunch.
Yeah.
If that.
It's just like, it doesn't work.
And then I'd eat a, you know, 2,000-calorie dinner. And like, then I missed having a nice warm lunch.
Yeah.
And that hot dog.
I've been eating, I've been having sort of a mainly liquid diet, not because it's like, you know how like people try and tell you, like, I'm not like falling for the influencer stuff. You know what I mean? Like, It just happens that I'm like, well, I'm just going to have soup because that's the thing I can make and that's simple enough. And then I realized last week, I was like, I want to eat food. Yeah. I don't want to drink it. I don't want it to just like be like boiled. I would like to eat real, like chew with my mouth.
Are you familiar with Soylent?
Yeah. Soylent Green?
Yeah. But like it's a company that is like basically, I don't know if it's still in there. Or this was like a couple years ago, like 10 years ago maybe. And it's basically like a food replacement that you just drink stuff with it.
Oh, I'm seeing this. Yeah, it's still around.
And my friend did it and he was like, oh, it's, you know, it's great, but I do have to chew gum because my jaw gets like tight because I don't really chew stuff. So he'd chew gum all the time. And I'm like, if I have to chew gum to simulate the feeling of my mouth chewing onto food, I probably need to eat actually something. Are you looking at this with like the idea of purchasing it?
Or you can see it in my glasses.
I
get that.
No, I see the glint in your eye. That's what I see.
Well, okay. So for a 12 pack, there are 400 calories each. Sorry for the food talk right at the beginning of the show. I was going to get us into the episode, and then this came up. And I'm like, this supersedes Assassin's Creed Valhalla or whatever it's called. This is a supersedes Xenoblade, whatever. I don't care. So for a pack of 12 of these things, it's $36.
Huh.
And like, you know, that's what, like almost $3 per?
Which is
$3 per for a lunch for a meal? That's not that bad.
When you really think about it that way, yeah.
However, is eating only this for lunch going to fill me up? I think the answer is no.
If you put it on your hot dog, maybe. So,
oh, see, I dunk it in there, Kobayashi style.
Whoa. Oh, God.
Cinnabox! Welcome back to Hitbox episode number 235. My name is Peter Hunt Spitek. Joining me, as always, is my wonderful friend and co-host, Justin the Dog Eater Makovich. Justin, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing pretty good. I do have to say, the thing I should be counting how many I eat of now is also tacos. That's the other thing I've been getting a little like crazy with. And much like you with the addiction to Taco Bell, it's been like a roller coaster because I will like have it five times in like a 3-day stretch, and then I won't have it for like 2 weeks because I'm like, I gotta be better. And then I'm like,
it's a cycle of addiction. Yeah,
I keep going with it. But I've been starting to make tacos at home. It takes seconds to make Taco Bell style tacos at home. Like, you can make it, prepare it in like 15 minutes.
What, Justin, do you think I'm eating for dinner after this. Tacos? It's so easy to put a bunch of ground beef in the crock pot. Or we're doing ground turkey. Ground turkey in the crock pot. Can of diced tomatoes. A can of green chilies. Put that on the crock pot for 10 hours. Fucking forget about it. And then you come back, you have delicious taco meat. Some diced up tomatoes. Some chopped up lettuce. Put that on those low calorie tortillas. Come on now. Come on now.
You're ready. You're ready for it. It's such an easy meal. And like I do it on the stovetop because it's a little quicker, whatever. Yeah. Can I tell you something about crock pots? They scare me. I have these nightmares.
Why?
I have these nightmares that I'll go to work and I'll come back and my house will be on fire and my poor little dog will be gone because of that. And it scares me.
Yes. I understand, and I think the reason I do it is because I'm home.
Right. Yeah, because that makes sense.
I have the same fear, right?
It's to the point I was.
Can I tell you something bad?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I was leaving the dryer on the other day, and I was like coming home for lunch, putting stuff in the dryer, and then leaving. And I was like, I need to get like a professional fire system put into my house because if anything would happen to this house when I'm gone, like I couldn't do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. I'm the same way. Where like, it's fine. That dryer's worked exactly how it's worked. But what if it doesn't?
What, the one time?
Yeah, like it doesn't, yeah. And if you're here, you can use the, fire extinguisher or whatever, put it out. Obviously, there's some damage there, but it's not your whole house burning down.
Right.
This is bad, but I work on the same logic where sometimes it'll be a Friday night and I realize I don't have a frozen pizza. And so I'll preheat the oven and run to it's like a 2-minute drive, grab the pizza, come back, and I'm getting home as the oven is finishing being done preheating.
Yeah.
But that's bad, right? I'm like
I would be afraid of doing it. Can I tell you how many times I've been halfway to work?
That's irresponsible of me, by the way. Go on.
Been halfway to work on my lunch break. And then I'm like to the point where it's irresponsible for me to turn around, but I'm like, did I leave the water on in the kitchen?
Dude, it's like the constant anxiety of leaving the house.
But I think it's like, because
is everything going to be okay when I get back?
When I was a kid, my house, when I left for school, it was like I was in grade school, like sixth grade. So I was the last one in the house, right? I had to close the garage door as I left. Parents weren't home, whatever. So I get on I close the garage door and I leave. I get on the bus and then we drive past my house and the garage door was just gaping. I see that from the bus. So the whole day, I'm like, what do I fucking do? And no one ever said anything about it.
Okay, so unpunished.
I don't know if it was like my neighbor closing the garage or like my parents when they came home from work, they just didn't realize that the garage was like, I opened it on the way there. But like I think that stems my fear. Thank you for this.
Yeah, I get it.
Therapy session. I appreciate it. To be honest, I think we've just found the root of my problems and insecurities.
Dude, take it up, bill our deluxe Patreon producers like Jane Earl, Cheeky Ass, and Josh Durham. Every single week, those deluxe Patreon producers are getting an additional 30-minute bonus episode. Today, we're talking about Wander Stop in a little bit more detail. I finished the game. Justin, you finished the game last week. Now we can talk about all sorts of stuff. And I think that, I'm excited to talk about it, too, because I think it's not like a plot-heavy game that you're not going to be able to know. Like, when you play the game, you know exactly where it's going to go. So but being able to talk about it without having to worry about what happens, I think is going to be kind of interesting. I'm excited to have that conversation. Again, if you're interested in that conversation, patreon.com/hitboxpod, become a $1 podcast producer or $3 deluxe podcast producer to get that extra bonus episode. You can also join our Discord server. You can rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, truly, you can do anything you want. It's you got free will. It's a free country, right?
I've been to stores and things aren't free. I've tried and I've been stopped by many an armed guard.
That is true. Now Baja Blast is $20 for two. Yeah, it is not. It's not a free country.
The
huh?
year off from when I was eating Taco Bell to when I started eating it again, that year off, the price of the $5 box has skyrocketed. Like you cannot leave that restaurant with having a meal without spending $11 to $12.
For me, I'm getting up there. I'm getting closer to 15, 17.
Well, that's because I have to do the Lux box. No matter whatever the Lux box is now, I do that.
Oh, so you're doing one of the deals?
I can do one of the deals, get an extra crunchy taco. That's $12.10. Maybe it's $12.07 if I go to the one in Bolingbrook.
Sure. Which If memory serves, is the better one.
I don't go by the one in Four Corners. That one is
no. If you just want to waste 90 minutes of your day just having them remake stuff for you, I guess you get a bunch of free shit. But like,
they did used to give me free Baja Blast because they knew me, because I would just go there and be like, "Can I get an extra large Baja Blast, no ice and nothing else?" And then they would just be like, "Yeah, just pull forward," and I'd be like, "Here's my money," and they're like, "Just leave."
I went there once and their whole system was down, so they just gave everything away for free. I called my mom and said, go to Taco Bell right now. I'm not even kidding. I'm not even joking.
I love that.
It was the best day of my life. Just here's a preview of what's coming up in the news. Game Informer is back.
What?
After being killed by GameStop. Indiana Jones is coming to the PS5, and Assassin's Creed Shadows is finally here. Justin, we're going to talk about those headlines and more. But before we do, would you join me in the Metacritic Roundup?
Let's go.
Metacritic Roundup.
Two games in the Metacritic Roundup this week. Two notable games. The first I want to talk about, Justin, is Xenoblade Chronicles X. This is the re-release, the Switch port of the game. It's the definitive edition for the Nintendo Switch. It scored an 88 on the Switch. This is Xenoblade Chronicles X the first game in the series?
No.
Okay.
No.
Walk me through this. You have played this. I want to hear what you think.
So Xenoblade Chronicles came out for the Wii. Xenoblade Chronicles 2 came out for the Switch. So that's technically the third game. And then Xenoblade Chronicles...
Wii U?
No, Xenoblade Chronicles X came out for the Wii U. So it was like in between those two. And I think they had the redo of Xenoblade Chronicles come out first, or one that came out for the 3DS 2, whatever. But this is technically like the second game that came out in the series. And... the game was, when it first came out, it was kind of locked away on the Wii U. But for what people talked about it, it was like a game that the different conceit from this one versus other ones is that eventually you get to drive these things called Skells or Skrells around, and they're basically Big Mechs. Skell.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about them is that that's a late addition to the game, but it's a huge like change in the gameplay. It's like Horizon when you get the Horizon Forbidden, when you get the big bird at the end, it kind of like changes up like not only your traversal, but how you interact with the world in kind of a cool way. So I have played 15 hours of this game and I have not unlocked a mech yet, but if you played a Xenoblade Chronicles game before, you know what this game is and what it feels like for the most part. So the game kind of starts off with this plot that planet Earth is being targeted by these two warring alien nations that are basically attacking each other outside of planet Earth, and their war with each other is basically destroying planet Earth. So all of humanity gets in these giant ships, these like habitat ships, to try to leave Earth before it gets destroyed, and it does get destroyed, and find a new place to live and settle down. So they basically take like one of the city that you're living in is like New Los Angeles. So it's like a Los Angeles, all the people from America, United States, Los Angeles that like come in there. As they're traveling through space, a bunch of people are in like cryopods that are put to sleep in this thing. But then there's some essential workers who are flying the ship and like living around and, you know, doing whatever. As you're nearing this planet, one of the alien races that was attacking and destroying planet Earth intercepts your ship, attacks your ship, and you crash land on this new foreign planet. And basically... the humanity is trying to survive on this new planet while finding out what this alien race is, trying to awaken all the humans in it. And you play one of the characters that has been woken from cryo in the middle of this like place. And then you basically have no memory and you go back to the city and like learn about all the stuff that's happening. Pretty cool setup. Part of the thing that makes this different from all the other Xenoblade games, and it's actually something I thought would make me not want to play it, is while that story seems like an interesting starting off point, the game is much more MMORPG rather than story-based RPG. And you basically have these chapters or these missions that equal chapters. But in order to unlock those chapters, you have to do just a bunch of open world exploration. Like, it's funny this game, we're going to be talking about Assassin's Creed soon. It's funny this game came out near Assassin's Creed because basically the whole world is set up in these hexagons and you have to like go to these places and set up these like basically towers that you have to synchronize with.
And like, okay, it shows up what's on the map,
what's going on. But this world is like absolutely massive. Like, it is a huge world. It's pretty much a continuous open world. It's not even like a zone world. It's like a big world. You can walk from one end to the other end, or you can fly eventually in your mech or your skell from one end to the other end. So a lot of the tasks that you're doing are kind of like you're picking up quests from people. And some of them are like gather this resource or kill this thing. Others of them are these things called affinity quests that you get to actually know some of your party members a little bit better. Or they're more kind of story-based missions, but not the main story. And then you have your chapter missions, which are the main story missions in which you're trying to basically waken up humanity and kind of finding out like what's happening in this area, who these alien creatures are that are attacking you, and so on and so forth. So the story is not the center point of this. And you know that because you play a voiceless protagonist that really is not involved in the plot. Most of the plot has to do with the characters around you, and you don't play an active character in it, much like any of the other Xenoblades.
Where you're doing the more like passive battling, where you get in the battle and you set it all up, or?
Oh no, you're still doing that, but your main character is like a voiceless protagonist instead of like a voice acted like character. So
okay,
I'm getting a hint, spoiler maybe ish this is me predicting spoilers, that there's more to this character than what we're given. But the way the story is told, he doesn't really talk to any character because he doesn't have a personality or like a voice, even, if that makes sense. So he's not like the main character, but all of your party members are the bigger focus. And then on top of that, you have way more party members than you do in the other Xenoblade games, that because you have so many of them, their importance to your story seems to be lessened. So at the very beginning, you're woken up by someone who is your party member, Alma. Whatever, it doesn't matter. And then she basically takes you back and you meet another party member, and they're kind of like your main ones. But then you get to a point where you pick a faction that apparently doesn't matter, but you pick a faction about what you want to do on this planet. And then all of a sudden, you get like three new party members immediately, but you don't really get to know who they are until you have them in your party and then do their affinity quests. So it kind of is like, again, these character stories are not like the main plot, and they seem like kind of tacked on around what the main plot is. And the main plot seems so narrow focused to what I'm used to in Xenoblade. Because if I am selling someone to Xenoblade, it is an epic world, this game has it, with a fun combat system, this one has the same combat system, and an epic story, this one does not have that epic story.
Interesting. Is this the first time you've played this?
Yes, I've never played it. It was one of those things that it was a late addition to the Wii U. And at that point, I wasn't like obsessed with this series yet. It really took me Xenoblade Chronicles 2 for me to become obsessed with the series. And then it was to the point where I was like, I don't want to bring out my Wii U to play this. Like, it's just not what I was going to do and go back and do it. I mean, I saw it at a Meijer one time for $10 and I was like, pretty tempting, but am I going to play this? Probably not. But like everything else about the game, the thing that they do great about this game is exploring this open world. And the world is simplistic looking on the outside, but sometimes getting around the map and finding where these synchronization points are is not as straightforward or as easy as just following this path and seeing it in the distance. Sometimes they'll be in underground caves. Sometimes they'll be surrounded by enemies that are 5-6 times your current level that you can't get around, or you can if you sneak around the right way. And I really do think like the design of the world is actually quite intentional and quite good. And then plus you have the same thing in any Xenoblade where you're walking around and you have these like massive dinosaur creatures walking around. They're level 97. And you're like, I'm never going to be able to fight that. And I probably never will actually be leveled up strong enough to fight that in the game, but they're like there to like create like a cool world to like walk around in. And I found myself a lot of the time just kind of ignoring the story missions and like just going to unlock new places of the map. So I basically, at this point, they have like 5 or 6 or biomes that you can go to. I basically started to explore 3 of them, even though 2 of them are way over leveled for me. But you're able to do that if you're clever enough about how you run around and stuff like that. So I've been kind of just lost in the mundanity of exploring the world rather than the story, which I'm actually surprised that that's scratching the itch that I want to play with this game. Speaking of the combat is pretty similar to what you would have with any of the other Xenoblade games that you played. It's basically like you have a set of powers at the bottom that have cooldowns on them that you're basically managing throughout battles. You can create combos with your party members in order to create like the topple, stagger, those kind of like different like effects on enemies to create more damage. You can also control the other characters if you wish. But the thing that makes this combat system a little bit more engaging than the other one is that your main character is like a Swiss Army knife that you can switch classes to any of the other classes throughout the game. So you can kind of customize your play style and you keep leveling things up to the max that eventually it makes sense for you to go back and do another class. So you kind of switch up your gameplay a little bit while still leveling up your character and getting more powerful. And on top of that, when you start doing these affinity missions with characters, you unlock special abilities from those characters that you only get from doing those affinity missions. So those are good for any class that you can use and add to your toolbox that you can even more customize your play style and more customize like what kind of combat you're doing. So I kind of started off as like this gun shooting, like just trooper. And eventually I became this like sword wielding paladin that would like kind of do defense offense while healing people. And then I basically went into this full sword wielding, laser sword wielding, kind of just like offensive machine that I'm kind of doing with. So I'm really like focused on close range combat and doing that kind of stuff. So it's so far in the 15 hours I played, I felt like I've been cycling through combat styles enough that I've never been sick with it, because eventually in Xenoblade, you get to a point where you're just using just the same moves over and over again. And it was something that I really liked in Xenoblade Chronicles 2, because that game had a much more like Pokemon system where you got like random like blades that you attached to yourself, and those blades would change your powers. And you'd have a bunch of like basic blades, and then you'd have a bunch of ones that were like really like rare ones that you would get that would have like voice actors and like storylines to them. So I was constantly changing my blades in that game. And in this one, I'm not changing my blades, but I'm changing my class more. And because there's so many more party members, I'm just changing my party members a little bit more. So, I mean, it hits all the things I like. This is the perfect kind of active time combat that I like in RPGs, that it's not really like I'm pressing A at the right time to do stuff, but like I'm managing my cooldowns and I'm like moving my position around the battlefield to like get where I need to go to make sure my side attack gets maximum damage and stuff like that. So far I am surprised that with a lame ass story, how much I'm actually digging playing this game. And it's kind of a great podcast game. A lot of the times it's like the perfect thing to just like explore this open world while you just have something on in the background. So Xenoblade Chronicles X so far, really digging it.
We talked about this before this game came out, where I was like, I don't know. Like, should I play this game? Someone who loved Xenoblade Chronicles 3. And you said probably not, because it is a very different experience than Xenoblade Chronicles 3. Now that you've put some time into it, do you still stand by that?
What was your favorite part about the Xenoblade Chronicles 3? Was that it? Or whatever it was?
Yeah, it was the characters in the story. So it sounds like I have my answer there.
Right.
But I didn't know if...
Yeah, okay. I would say the combat is better in this game. Like, the combat system is way better in this game than in the last Xenoblade game. But like the story, it just feels like you're putting together side quests that kind of fit together to be a full story rather than it being this huge epic. Like, I don't foresee there to be this epic montage when you're basically waiting to die in a prison with this beautiful music playing in the background and this like really impactful scene that you have at the very end of it when you're like doing this great metaphor of like two worlds collide kind of thing. I don't foresee that happening in this story. And maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong, but I do not think with what I played in this game, what I've gotten out of this game is not that I can't wait for the next story mission. It's like, I can't wait till my character is strong enough that I can enter and explore this new world.
Mm-hmm.
Or this new portion of the map. So yeah, I still don't think it would be something that you would love.
Okay. But it's good to know, you know what I mean? That I would probably like this enough, but maybe this isn't something I need to run out and spend the money on in this exact second.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking for like a kind of monkey brain scratch, I think one of the things that you would probably prefer over this would be like an Assassin's Creed, because I'm sure that story is going to give you more. The combat is something that would be familiar, like, you know what it's going to be. But I think that experience would probably be the monkey scratch itch you'd look for at this point if you're looking to play one of those two games.
Gotcha. Okay, well, that's good to know. I'm glad that you're enjoying it, and I'm looking forward to hearing more of your thoughts as you play more of it. Assassin's Creed Shadows is out as well. It scored an 85 on the Xbox Series X, an 81 on the PS5, and a 78 on the PC. This is the latest in the Assassin's Creed series set in Japan, where you play as a shinobi named Naoe and a samurai named,
gotcha.
I said it exactly how you do, named Yasuke. Though, interestingly enough, apparently it takes a while to get to Yasuke in the game. Mm. I thought it was the sort of thing where it was going to just start like, what's the one where you play as a brother and a sister?
Syndicate.
You know what I'm talking about? Syndicate, yeah, where it was just gonna be like, choose whichever one, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But apparently you have to get a ways into it. Huge release for this. It seems like people are generally saying this is more Assassin's Creed, which does not make me want to run out and buy this thing. But there have been a handful of bits of information here and there that did intrigue me a little bit. Like, people say this game is actually slower than Assassin's Creed games tend to be, which was interesting because I'm like, oh, like, yeah, like Assassin's Creed is just so like uninterested in letting players think. You know what I mean? Like Ubisoft games to me have gotten just so like streamlined, and that's OK. That's like for a certain type of game, but it's not what I look for. And it's not what I liked about the older Assassin's Creed games. And so it seems like this one might be a little bit closer to those in terms of that. Like when you do the synchronization points, to my understanding, it doesn't just like litter your map with icons and stuff, which is kind of interesting. I don't know exactly what they replace that with. I'm forgetting that.
The wind
at this exact moment. Was it? No, that's Ghost of Tsushima. But this seems like it is at the very least, potentially a little bit more interesting than Assassin's Creed Valhalla. It, for me, in terms of its setting and its characters, like already the plot just sounds a little bit more interesting because the plot of Valhalla, I mean, it was like serialized basically, you know, it was like an episode. It was just like a bunch of different episodes of like, here's some drama going on. And the plot was just go conquer England.
So,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Not to bring this up again, but that's very similar to how Xenoblade Chronicles X plays out in its like gameplay.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Like you have to do enough of the side stuff in order to level up strong enough to continue with the main story stuff, which makes it feel very disjointed. But yeah, I don't think this one seems to be that same kind of game.
No. This seems to be a little bit more focused in terms of its narrative. I imagine it seems like it still has the busy work stuff. I did read that in reviews.
Yeah, it's Assassin's Creed, man.
That's the thing. It's still got that. But, like, I don't know. I think this game is obviously going to be compared most to Ghost of Tsushima. And I don't think that's an unfair comparison, right? If I play this, that is the thing that I'm going to be most interested in. Is, like, okay, how does this game fill your time? Because I think Ghost of Tsushima has really good side content. It's not all of it's particularly deep, but I felt that like there wasn't a lot of like copy pasted stuff. And the things that you could say were copy pasted were like finding those shrines or those like bathhouses and stuff like that. But that's not a copy pasted like mission, right? That's just like, oh, there's something on the map. Go find that thing, you know, which is different. But I don't know. I am a little bit interested in the story for this one, at the very least, because I do think that like these two characters seem like interesting narratively for this setting, you know. But I don't know. I'll say that I have seen a lot of people talking about the jank in this game, that it is got the Ubisoft Assassin's Creed jank to it. it's funny when I previewed this game, a hands-off preview for at Summer Game Fest last year. I wrote like, dang, this has the same bugs as Valhalla. Like, you know, it's not a finished product. Maybe they'll iron it out. But like, people will get caught. Like when I previewed it, like someone, like NPCs would get caught in the background on like woven baskets and then freak the fuck out. And the physics on the baskets would freak out and they would just like explode everywhere. You know, while like nothing was happening, you know, just like, oh, okay. Yeah. They don't, they still haven't figured that one out, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know. Like I said, I'm trying not to drink the Kool-Aid on this because the trailer that is playing right now on the Metacritic, I'm like,
it looks pretty cool, right?
It looks pretty good.
Yeah, I know.
Luckily, I mean, Star Wars Outlaws right now is what? Is that even a year old?
Oh,
no.
Yeah.
It's 50% off on sale right now.
50% off, 50% off, like 20, like 75% off? Are we talking about? Like,
no, excuse me. But good on how you scaled that math there. On how 50% off. 50%
I teach off, I teach English, off. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And apparently math on the side. But yeah, I don't know. Like this game has scored exactly how I thought it would. Like 80,
yep,
you know?
80 with a bad user rating.
Yeah, I wonder why. No one's really talked about...
Yeah, why would the users
how
hate...
How weirdos online... Yeah. I'll say this, though. It has been really interesting to see, like... Okay, this game sold really well already. It's past 2 million players. Let me pull up my... I have a whole list of tweets and information here and stuff like that. Good old what's his name? Who? Kamiya? Do you know what I'm talking about? Hidetaki Kamiya? He is the creator of, I think, Bayonetta, among other things.
Okay, yeah.
He is known for being kind of like an ass. Like just like... He blocks people on Twitter for no reason. Not for no reason, but it's like he will not tolerate shit, basically, which I really respect. And so I don't know where this comes from, but this is a Dexterto or a Dexerto. Is that how you say it? I've always pronounced it Dextero. Dexterto.
Is it Dexterto? Do they add a T without us knowing?
No, but I've just added it in my mind. how would you even pronounce this? Dexerto? Dexerto? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Well, Dexerto.
Dexter.
It's like a news aggregate website that just like will steal like a headline and then.
I think I must be dyslexic because I thought it was Dextero, but like it's actually.
I thought it was Dextero for the longest time, but it's not.
Dexerto.
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 Anyway, they tweeted out is a quote from Kamiya. Kamiya, there are a few super intense people who make a big fuss. Legendary Japanese dev Hidetaki Kamiya says, normal people don't care about the Assassin's Creed Shadows controversy. And I think that's true. I think that is so absolutely true that like people don't care. People do not care. Like normal people truly don't give a shit about these things. Because I think most normal people are not like mad that there's a black dude in the game. I think not having any opinion on that is extremely normal. You know what I mean? I'm just like, oh, okay, yeah, that's makes sense. Like, do you know what I'm getting at?
I my negativity with this has to do with the state of our country, because I think like those opinions are becoming more and more mainstream opinions.
I would agree.
You know what
I
mean?
I would say that having people be so loud about it does empower, I would say, younger people to be like, oh, I can be this way.
Right.
Older people as well. But I think like when you look at like video game, like games, gamers and stuff like that, like it empowers people to just be like, oh, I can totally be this way.
Mm-hmm.
But largely, I think people don't care because here's some numbers. This is from Tom Henderson from Insider Gaming or Inside Gaming, Insider Gaming. Tweets, had to remove the original Valhalla / Shadows tweet because I was sourcing the Valhalla wiki, which was inaccurate. Behind the scenes data via Ubisoft sources, Valhalla had day one player numbers of 2.55 million players. Odyssey day one players, 430,000. So like a quarter of that. And Assassin's Creed Shadows day two player numbers, 2.2 million. Shadows should do about 6 million in its first month on its trajectory. Valhalla did 8 million. Something that someone else pointed out that is overlooked in all this data as well. This is highlighted from Henderson's article. Sorry. It says this. At the time of writing, March 24th, Shadows is tracking to hit 3 million players in the coming days. According to its trajectory, Shadows should hit roughly 6 million players within its first month. But it's worth pointing out that the game was released in Q1 compared to other successful Assassin's Creed games that release in the holiday season. And I think that's actually a big point, right? Like, this game is not coming out in a time when most people associate with, like, oh, I'm going to buy this game. Because, you know, that like October to early December range is when we sort of like put in our minds like, oh, the big blockbuster games are coming out. This obviously wasn't in that window. So like, there you go, you know?
Yeah. And like, that's still good considering like the time between it. Like having,
that's so
like,
great. Right.
Like,
me?
That's the thing. Like,
yes,
it's one of those things, not just video games, but any kind of sales numbers, like always trying to like predict towards your best seller is not going to create success. Like, again, it sounds like Valhalla was one of the best beginning.
I think it was their best selling.
Bestseller one, right?
Yeah.
So the question is not so much about, is it going to reach, like, be better than that? Is it going to maintain numbers that are similar? And to me, it sounds like, as you're saying, with where it's coming out in the year, with how many people are buying it right now, this sounds like it's doing great. But you know what I think? I think what they should have done was waited at least a week until Xenoblade Chronicles X had its time in the sun. And then once people got sick of that, then they would go to it. But right now they just made a poor decision looking at the calendar. All those.
I think that's clear, Justin. Yeah. I think you really hit the nail on the head there.
I probably would have bought it if it was not up against those two. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Christopher Dring, who, by the way, just announced that he's has a new, I guess, what is this even called? It's like a podcast show that's being sponsored by like Jeff Keighley called The Game Business. Christopher Dring is ex gamesindustry.biz. So this is a pretty high quality reporting. I have not looked into it yet. The Game Business is a full publication as well. Which is billed as expert analysis, exclusive data, and in-depth interviews on the global games industry, developed by industry insider Chris Dring. Absolutely worth checking that out. I have not done that yet, but he's a certified great source for game stuff. Someone that we source a lot when he was at Games Industry Biz. But so he tweeted a few notes on Assassin's Creed Shadows and its performance. The numbers are good. 2 million players of a $70 game in this market is a feat, even with an established IP. Second biggest launch in Assassin's Creed history. It feels like a great result in a challenging time. It's big, and it seems like it's only going to just keep getting bigger here, which is good.
Yeah. I think my thought with the game too is that, am I going to play this game? I probably would, and I don't want to be this person, but like, I know how I'll play this game. It's probably a 40-hour game, you know, to beat from beginning to end. Maybe the story, if I just streamline, it'll be a little bit less, but like these games tend to like bloat. I would probably start playing it and then like just bring my focus to something else. Like, this doesn't seem like it's going to pull me into it for the completion of it. And that's not a bad thing. If it the right Agreed. Time of the year, it might be something that like, hey, it's the summer of Assassin's Creed. Who knows?
Yeah.
And I haven't played this game really since the Valhalla, which I guess is not that long ago.
One.
And that one I didn't really like finish or like engage with in the way that I could have. Maybe this is the one to get me back into it.
I'll say I tend to play Assassin's Creed games paying attention to what's going on in the story for the first, you know, 10-15 hours, and then as the bloat just continues and the just like plot points just get like disappear, like, yeah, it's just like the question is like, am I gonna finish this?
Yeah.
You know, because it's just, you know, what it is. I'll say this too. The PS5 Pro, have you seen this?
Mm-mm.
This game is the first good argument for the PS5 Pro, where it looks significantly better on PS5 Pro with its lighting, specifically the shadows and stuff like that, no pun intended, are like really immaculate, and so it's the sort of thing where you like, it is a visible step up in terms of its realism. That said, does it make it play any different? Am I going to notice any huge difference if I never see the side-by-side comparison? No. But it's worth pointing out.
I think the game itself looks beautiful. I saw a couple like images of like the weather system they have in the game, and it kind of like creates these like natural yeah. like weather systems inside, and like you see the transitions, which is really kind of cool to have that kind of stuff. And I know that stuff is not necessarily the selling point of the game. It's something that I as a gamer kind of tune out eventually, but like it does do a lot to like just create like a believable fun world to play in, that eventually those kind of changes and innovations stack up, that you look back at Assassin's Creed from 10 years ago and it's like, well, this shit is ugly.
Yes. Yes, 100%. It's small, right? But it is going to be something that, like, oh no, like it's a good detail. It's an interesting detail.
Can I ask you a question about like me like not noticing something on like a TV, but then I noticed something. This is a little bit of a non sequitur. So my wife started watching Wicked on was that Peacock? It's on Peacock. It's streaming on Peacock or one of those ones.
Okay.
So she goes to watch it, and like you see like the little like streaming thing, the preview of it, and it's like these fun colors, and then she goes to play it. And the quality of the image looks horrible. Mm-hmm. Like it looks either really mm-hmm. dark, or if you futz around with the settings, it looks really bright. But then you like exit it, and then you look back at the preview and it looks perfect. Why? Mm. And it's one of those things that yeah. if my wife is complaining about it, like it's got to be really bad. And boy, is it really bad.
Yeah. Wicked looks bad streaming.
It might just be our TV too, but like it's weird that it looks good in the preview, but then when it comes time to like watch it and like start streaming it, it looks bad. But
someone put on Threads, am I crazy, is the home version of Wicked more color saturated? Awesome. So I can't say.
Well, it's gonna make us get a new TV probably, but if that doesn't solve the problem, there will be a TV thrown in my front yard. So if you want it,
okay, I'll keep my eyes peeled on that. Let me I don't know anything about TikTok. I don't know if this is helpful, but when I searched it online, this came up, and these are videos of people talking about how to watch this film.
All right, let's.
I don't know. I would say do your own research. On this.
Do your own research. I prefer to just let like Joe Rogan tell me what to do.
And did you see him? I mean, like we can all agree. And I think like the thing is like important to know what you bring to the table, right? I think that's just something important. Joe Rogan, you're not like a smart guy. Like that's, you know what I mean? Like you're a comedian, man. Like that's fine. You used to be at the very least, right? Like why are you pretending? And did you see him? All those JFK files got released. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And he like tweeted out like, "Damn, has anyone fed this to Grok yet? Someone so they could summarize it for me." Grok, the Twitter, the AI, and just like, big day for fucking do your own research, guys, huh? just like unable to sift through documents. It's because why would you? It sounds like awful, but you know,
to find out nothing.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the other thing, dude. I know, because if they're releasing it, that means that it's not gonna. There's nothing in it. There's nothing in it. So that's our take on Joe Rogan. Spotify, you want to do a deal with us instead? Maybe.
I would take a third of that money.
I'll get you one better, Spotify. We'll take a sixth of it.
Okay, fine. All right, fine. You've worn really, me down, really Spotify.
Twist my arm.
An eighth of it, Spotify. I'll take an eighth of that.
Here's the difference between me and you and Joe Rogan. One, a platform. Two, I will admit that I'm an idiot.
Oh, I am.
I don't know anything.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about anything.
No.
But I'll tell you that. I'm not gonna pretend like I'm like, huh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm
about to teach The Color Purple to my juniors, and I've been practicing that a lot. Like, I don't know anything, guys. We're just going to read this, and I don't know anything.
I forgot that was a book, and I thought you were making a joke, and I was like, you're going to teach them The Color Purple?
Well, yeah.
Like, to identify what The Color Purple is?
Visual literacy, my friend. Remember,
I guess that's
true. Do you remember the game Word Munchers?
No.
It's like a little like grid game where you have to like find like eat all the verbs or eat all the nouns, right?
Yes. 100%.
So when I was in grade school, I wanted to get the best score on that game. So I did like the colors. Like because it was you didn't have to think about it. So it was like eat all the blue. I'm like, fuck, I got this. And then you like blue, go through. Easy. Yeah, blue, 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 blue. That game.
Yeah. I was more of a legend island of the Zumbinis kind of guy.
What is the island of the Zumbinis?
Yeah, you don't know Island of the Zumbinis?
If this is the game I've been looking for, how do you spell Zumbinis?
Zoombinis.
If this is the game I've been looking for, no, it's not. Okay, thank God. There's this game.
It is actually titled Zumbinis Island Odyssey. I apologize.
There is this game,
it's a math game
that I remember playing at the library, the public library. You were like a little creature and you're walking around this world, this little island thing. You got to pick the creature you were. I have been trying to find this game for years. And whenever I start to like, I've looked at hours of compilations of like old 90s computer games that you might see at a library, and I have not found this one.
You're not thinking of
say it. I'll look up
Spore, are you?
No, it's definitely not Spore.
Okay,
it's
okay.
Spore.
Okay.
No. I know what Spore is. But it's like you like start off and it's kind of like a adventure game, and you pick like three different like little creature things, and then you kind of go through. I think it was like a first person-ish game where you like walk around, it's like a point and click game. I really can't remember it, but I know it was something that's there, and I've wanted to play it as an adult, and I cannot think and find it.
I'll, you know, keep an eye out for you.
Like if I type in 90s games you'd play in a library, this is the rabbit hole again. It's already, you know, I've searched this.
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to find it and I just can't find it.
And we're firmly in bonus episode material.
Can we just play just, like 90s library games?
yeah, 100%.
Logical Journey of Zumbinis did come up as one of them, but it's not the one that I'm thinking of.
Gotcha. Yeah. Justin, while you look at that, why don't you join me in talking about the news?
Let's go.
We're so back.
Wait,
direct quote from Game Informer. What's that?
I was gonna say we really haven't really technically started the news yet, have we?
I suppose we have at this point. Did you find something?
No. Trust me, you would know. I would make a sound that you've never heard before. Sure. Actually, you probably wouldn't hear it because Discord would mute that sound.
Would mute it? Yeah. Game Informer is back. An insane bit of good news here. It's so rare that we get to share good news in the games industry. I feel like the last big piece of good news coming out of the games industry was Tango Gameworks not being completely shuttered. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. Like, right. Like, that's like, yeah. There's not enough good news anymore.
Yeah. And so Game Informer is back. So let me just read you. This is on the Game Informer website. This is a letter from the editor in chief. Game Informer is back by Matt Miller, editor in chief. The whole team has returned and we can't wait to connect with you again. I was devastated last summer when Game Informer was shuttered by our prior parent company, and so was the rest of our team. Not only did we really relish working together, but we also thought we were doing something valuable in contributing to the conversation around the gaming hobby. The thing that caught us all by surprise was the reaction to the shutdown from our readers, viewers, and the broader gaming industry. I received countless messages speaking about growing up with the magazine and the joy of the paging through each month. For many, Game Informer was a gateway into gaming as a dedicated hobby. They sort of explain here that over the months since two remarkable things have happened. The first is that Game Informer, as a brand and an outlet, was purchased and given a new lease on life. The second is that the entire team that was working together at Game Informer's closure has returned from editorial to production and beyond. The entire team, seriously, I'm still pinching myself. So they also write, how did this all happen? After first touching base with our team and ensuring our interest, the team at Gunzilla Games secured the rights to Game Informer. From the start, the new owners insisted on the idea of Game Informer remaining an independent editorial outlet. They felt just as strongly as our team did that the only path forward was with an editorial group that made 100% of the decisions around what we cover and how we do so without any influence from them or anyone else. So this company, Gunzilla Games, basically just bought the Game Informer brand and just gave it back to the people who were working on it, and then has given them 100% control, which is cool. So they write too, Game Informer now operates under an entity called Game Informer Inc., and our intent is to continue to focus on highlighting the coolest games, celebrating the history and legacy of the gaming industry, and shining a spotlight on the creators and players who are charting its future. I don't know. This seems really, really good. The entire website is back up. The branding is all back. There is a whole bunch of new content that they put on here. Reviews for basically every game that's come out since the game shut down. They have reviews for. They did their belated 2024 Game of the Year conversations and stuff like that. Like, this is pretty cool, man. What do you think about all of this?
One of my things here is that I've been seeing a lot that Godzilla Games is like this NFT-based publisher. Like, that's a lot of what they do and what they, like, deal with. A lot of blockchain, because I still fucking know what that is, man. I'm smart.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
You know the blockchain? Ask Joe Rogan what the blockchain is, and he'll be like, yo, man. And he'll
be like, Jamie, look that up.
That's so good. But, like, at a certain point, something like this, I don't want to be skeptical about this, right? There's something about this that I think is, it's great that we have this publication back. It's great that they're doing that. I really hope it's not one of those situations where it's this company that's trying to diversify things and eventually they lose the funding of it. But the fact that they brought everyone back and they have this huge backlog, and the fact that Game Informer is back and removed from its stupid parent company, I think it's such a good thing that at a certain point where the money comes from doesn't matter at this point, as long as it's not like, you know, like the human rights violations. But like, if this money is coming from a publisher who's making money in the blockchain, great, whatever. It's back. And a real gaming publication is back in a world where gaming publications are few and far between and the jobs are shuttering quicker than they can open.
To me, the thing is this. If you are going to be owned by a parent company, you are signing a deal with the devil. That's just true.
Correct. Right?
Godzilla Game is an independent. Are they a studio publisher? I'm not super. I think they're a studio.
I thought
they are. Off the Grid is their game. Oh, I've seen this being advertised. Yeah, because it's coming soon. I think it's like an early access or something like that. Anyway, it's billed as the most unhinged battle royale. Sounds super wacky. Either way, it sounds like Game Informer is in a good place where they are getting funding and they have jobs and they are going to be making the choices for their editorial team. And I think that employee owned is the way to go with this sort of thing. It's not employee funded, right? Or it's not audience funded, because their funding comes from this game studio. But at the end of the day, like, it sounds like they are able to make the choices they want to make. And I think that's really cool.
And again, you know what I mean? As you said, it's a deal with the devil. Even if, like, you know, best case scenario, they have a parent company, they're still around now, right?
Yeah, and I'll say this, they are in, it's hard to be in worse hands than the hands of GameStop. You ever go into a GameStop in the past 5 years?
No.
It's the worst thing you could possibly go, it's the worst store you could possibly enter. Just fucking Funko Pops just everywhere. Just like Overwatch merch from 2016 that just never got sold. I think anyone else. Dan Reichert tweeted, I think it was Dan Reichert, tweeted, or skeeted on Blue Sky, rather. It is very possible that Game Informer outlives GameStop as a business.
It's true.
And that is extremely exciting. I think this is pretty cool. I mean, like, the absolute breadth of reviews and stuff they have on here is substantial. I mean, it goes back to 1,000 Times Resist, Arco, Madden NFL 25, Star Wars Outlaws, Astrobot, NBA 2K25, Warhammer Space Marine 2, all of this stuff, Plucky Squire, Mouthwashing, Echoes of Wisdom, all of those games came out between right now and then, and they have reviews for them up right now. You know what I mean? It's just like they were able to cover the things they want to cover and they're back. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what they will publish. Do you think you're going to subscribe, get the magazine sent to your house?
It really depends on what that costs. You know what I mean?
I'm not in a
great financial spot, but like for something like that. But like, I'm happy that that's there. And, you know, depending on what my finances look like in a year from now or whatever, like, that's certainly something I'm interested in supporting. Because I'm happy and excited to support people doing really good work in this industry. Aftermath.site is another place to support if that's something you're interested in.
Did you get magazines when you were younger, like video game magazines at all?
Oh, yeah. It was Nintendo Power for me, mostly, was the one we were interested in. And then when we were in high school, it was Game Informer.
Nintendo Power for me specifically was one that I started doing. It was one of the times I learned a lot about my parents through Nintendo Power, because I was subscribing to them, and I would usually re-up my subscription with like a game pre-order or something like that. Like, I remember you get like 12 months of a Nintendo Power, you'd pre-order, you get Majora's Mask, and then you get like a couple things with it. So I had a pretty extensive collection, but then we were like cleaning out our attic, and my mom's like, I got something here. And she had like all the Nintendo Powers from like issue 20 up until like what I had almost and where I started it. So I just had these like ancient, like the OG Nintendo Powers that you would have. And like, I was able to go through, and I was like, why would my, like, again, it like reveals something about your parents you didn't quite understand, like that they would be subscribing to Nintendo Power.
Yeah.
Blew my mind.
Wild. What did you do with those? I mean, that's cool to have. Like,
I had them.
They gone.
They're gone. I'm sorry. It was. You know,
that's,
like,
no, that's okay.
When you give them to a child like me that didn't have a house in a small room.
Oh, I see. Oh, I thought
No, we're talking about my mom who threw away my grandpa's war letters. No. The
she was not holding on to the Nintendo Power. Yes.
Yeah, she was not going to keep those. No, this was like when I was a kid. And like, you know, like by the time I moved out, somehow my one, like, you know, 9x9 room was able to fit into a whole 2-bedroom condo. like I don't know how I was living at the end there, but
I'm just really happy. I'm just really excited that that this is happening, and that the entire team is back. That's insanity for this industry. And for them to get the budget for everyone. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like a huge team when it was shuttered, but like, I just think that's cool.
Yeah.
Justin, you know what else is cool? Something exciting for you here. Indiana Jones and the Great Circle.
Yeah. Number two game
coming
of the year.
PlayStation 5. Coming to the PlayStation 5 on April 17th. So there you go. I mean, this is, we knew this was going to be happening. Obviously, it is pretty far removed from the launch of that game. What, that's four? That's 6 months? 5 months? When did that game come out? Was it November or December?
End of November, I thought. Maybe it was December. Actually, was it December? Indiana
Jones.
We'll
never know.
There's no way to find out.
No way to tell.
Yeah. I think June 12th, 1981.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, so just a few years after that.
Yeah.
A few months after
December
that.
9th. Yeah, so there you December go. 9th is when it came out.
Okay, so 5 months. But hey, we've talked about this. I think this is a good strategy for Xbox Game Studios moving forward in terms of their biggest titles and stuff. I think it's cool for people who are a fan of this game or were interested in this game and weren't obviously able to play it. Yeah, there you go. Are you picking this up on the PS5?
Absolutely
getting
not.
Getting that platinum?
Absolutely not. It has nothing to do. Like, I would, first of all, this would be a very tedious platinum if you asked me, I think.
Because,
like, once you're done, like, the open world stuff, you, like, get back into it. And, like, I literally finished and I was, like, holding a lemon in my hand as the character. And I was like, I'm not. We're good. I'm done with
this. That's it.
But, like, I, as you said, I think this is, like, a really good strategy, because at the end of the day, I wouldn't have played this game. I would have played this game when it came out, and because it came out on Xbox first, I played it on Xbox, and it was on Game Pass, and like free, whatever we call free on Game Pass, because it's really not free. But what did you think about the, did you watch the trailer?
I did not. So it was Todd Howard and Troy Baker, right? Just hanging out?
No. It's Nolan North.
Was he in?
Uncharted.
Well, I know he's in Uncharted, but... Was it not Todd Howard and Troy Baker?
No, that's not Nolan North. I'm pretty sure that's Nolan North. Yeah, it's Nolan North. Wasn't there like a collab or something that was listed?
All right, here's what we're doing. We're pausing the podcast. We're gonna watch this right now.
Okay, got it. Sorry. So did you ever have the, like, when you were a kid, like, you like set stuff up in your room, and you have this little like play set that you'd set up. Like, I would pretend I was Indiana Jones when I was a kid, and I'd have this little like whip toy, and then I like set up all my toys and like pretend I was Indiana Jones.
Certainly, I was more of a Bionicle kid. But
did you dress up like a Bionicle?
I guess no, I didn't. I see what you're saying, though.
Yeah.
I certainly did this for maybe Ninja Turtles. Go on.
I mean, I've done it. I did it with Indiana Jones. I did it with Men in Black. I did it with Captain America. You know, just dressing up as Jedi. Fucking yeah. Are you kidding me?
Oh, you see that? Yeah, Star Wars stuff, of course. The ad is cute. I mean, it's Nolan North, obviously. I thought it was Todd Howard based on the photos I've seen of this. But Nolan North, voice of Nathan Drake, talking with Troy Baker. It's cute. I like it. I think that they've got good chemistry. They're always good when they're in stuff together.
Absolutely. And I like it too, because Nolan North kind of is the, I would say the alpha between the two of them. In most any other situation, Troy Baker is kind of the alpha in like a situation.
I feel like they've swapped in that. I feel like Troy Baker used to be like the guy who's like voicing a bunch of random NPCs in the background of games.
Yeah.
Games that Nolan North starred in.
Yeah.
And then now it's kind of flipped a little bit
the other way.
I mean, I don't know if Nolan North is doing that exactly, but like Troy Baker is in every single video game. He's inescapable.
Yeah. You can't get rid of him. He's everywhere. He's behind you.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, there you go. Coming to PS5, April 17th. Justin, apparently, publisher, let me just read you this headline from VGC by Andy Robinson. Multiple publishers, quote, ready to delay their games to avoid GTA 6 onslaught, it's claimed. An industry insider has claimed that at least three major publishers are preparing to delay their games depending on the release date of Grand Theft Auto 6. We've talked about this a little bit before, right? Obviously, this is going to be the biggest game of the year, probably the biggest game of the decade, right? And so it makes sense that studios and publishers are potentially trying to get out of the way to let that game have its space. What do you make of this?
Well, I mean, I really think Assassin's Creed Shadows should have really just taken this to heart and gone up against Xenoblade. Like, I mean, that was silly. Like, everything should have cleared Xenoblade. That is the biggest selling game ever in the history of games. I think it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, it is one of those things that this is a game, this is one of the games that you would part the seas for. You would avoid creating a conflict with this because, you know, there's only so much money to spend. And if you want to see your game forgotten about and not talked about, and I'm not even necessarily thinking money is the biggest factor. It's more about like the social media presence, because this will be a game that is literally everywhere for the weeks following its release. Like that week it comes out, it's going to blow up the social medias. It's going to be mainstream social media. It's going to be like enthusiast social media. It's going to be everywhere you look, whether you want to or not. And if you put a game out like Assassin's Creed, can you imagine if Assassin's Creed Shadows went up against Grand Theft Auto?
Oh my gosh. You know what it actually would be? Whatever the next Horizon game.
Can you imagine? That would hurt me so bad. It's but like the only kind of game that I would think would be like an interesting 1-2 punch would be Mario and Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah. And I think that those just have different markets, right?
Right.
Where it's like
the Animal Crossing.
Those games can, people are going to buy both. I 100% agree. I don't think Nintendo should be worried about this at all. And you know, you did mention it's not a money thing. I think it is a money thing, depending on how, like, if GTA 6 costs $100, which some industry analysts have said that it might. I do think that publishers are going to start to really reassess the release calendar and say like, fuck, $100 is a lot of money. And if this is how much games cost now, then we are going to have to reassess how we launch these titles, because at $70, money is tight, right? For new games. If $100, you are getting one, for me, someone like me, I'm getting like a new game every 6 months. You know what I mean?
Yeah. On top of that too, it'll be interesting if they do go $100, when do other people start following suit and also making their games $100? And who's going to be the first game big enough to make their game $100? Because I'm sorry, Grand Theft Auto is not your average Assassin's Creed game. It is a game that I feel can wear the weight of $100 and it not be something that people scoff at. I mean, I would be like, shit, it's $100, but I would still fucking buy it. You say Assassin's Creed Shadows $100? Peter. Not buying that.
Dude, what was that? What was the game? What is it called? It's the Warhammer game. Warhammer 40K, whatever. Mm-hmm. When I was trying to buy it on the PlayStation Marketplace, they only offered me the $100 digital deluxe version of it or whatever. And it was this thing where it was like, you couldn't search up the base game. You had to find it through like some menus on there. I was like, I'm not paying $100 for this game. Cause you know, it is true though, that like games do cost $100. There's $100 version of Star Wars Outlaws, $100 version of Assassin's Creed, you know, for those digital deluxe things. But that's always like, I have no interest in a digital art book, you know, or a soundtrack that can only be listened to.
Have you heard of Spotify?
When my PS5 is on. Yeah, exactly. But so like, who is that first company that follows their footsteps?
Nintendo. Nintendo, you fuckers.
Nintendo, you think Nintendo would? They, no, they haven't, I mean, even like,
their games
some
are
of
still
those
60.
Games are 70, some of them are 60. Yeah.
Well, the Nintendo first party are 70? Or is that true?
Some of them are. Tears of the Kingdom was. Do you remember this?
It
was
a whole thing. Yeah,
they released
a
statement saying this is worth it.
But again, it also feels like that is a game that can hold that weight.
I would agree.
By the
Mario plus Rabbids, probably not.
No, I'm not.
Although
another Ubisoft game.
yeah.
I actually, when I went to buy Xenoblade, can you guess there's another Nintendo game I'm going to be buying this year for sure.
Metroid, when that comes out? No.
Pokemon.
I'm not sure.
Pokemon.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yeah. Of course.
So I'm going to buy that. So I did the voucher thing when you get the two games for $100. So you basically save the $20 on it, which to me, I'm like, fuck yeah, I got the two games for $100 instead of like two games for $120. So I feel good about that.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to use up my gold points because they're retiring that. So I had to like use those. So save.
They're retiring that?
I thought so, right?
I don't know.
Nintendo, because I love that. Like whenever you like have saved up enough that it's,
you have to use them relatively quickly though, don't you?
I think so. It's discontinuing my Nintendo Gold Points program. Will no longer be possible to earn these rewards after a certain date.
Oh, well, there you go. I guess that's going away.
Yeah, and I'm assuming it's probably going to be linked to the new console when that comes out. Which,
oh, that's actually, what, oh, hey, that's,
we're a week away, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Cause what's the second?
Yeah. I've been saving up for this thing. So I'm so excited to buy
it. I should probably start thinking about that, huh?
Yeah. Did I ever tell you about my dollar a day savings?
No.
So every,
I'm talking about this, go ahead.
Every year I save a dollar a day for 365 days to get $365. I have my daily budget app. That every day it just takes out an extra dollar, like I'm spending for something. So I'm technically like saving, but I don't feel it. And then I get some money for it. And I've been saving with the idea that I'm going to buy this Switch. And I've been doing an extra $2 a day for the beginning of this year too.
I actually love that. And I think that's really smart. That's a really smart way to do it. Cause yeah, like a dollar a day, like, I'm not saying you're not going to ever feel that, but it is possible to not feel that, right? That's really smart. I forgot that I'm going to have to figure out how to buy the Switch. But what? It's launching in probably October, you think?
Yeah.
Can't be any earlier than that. So I got time. Right?
What if it's like, and it's launching today, and then
today,
they
I would
throw
lose
a
my
couple.
Shit.
Can you imagine how like, fucking crazy? We're all running to Target.
Yeah.
Oh no, we don't. Not Target. We don't do Target anymore. I'd run to.
Dude, can I tell you this? This is true. I had looked everywhere for a very specific. I was looking for a suit jacket and some pants. I went to Savers. I went to, what's it called? Not Goodwill. Oh yeah, Goodwill, not Salvation Army. Goodwill. I went to a handful of stores. Could not find it. I was like, oh, I suppose I just have to buy this on Amazon. I felt bad.
No. Have you been canceled not using Amazon?
We talked about this a little bit. Was it last week or was it the week before? Just like, it's just tough, man, to like live in the world we live in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And to like feel like you're just participating in all the shit,
mm-hmm.
You know? And it's like, how do I not participate in this shit? And I was like, oh, I'll go to Kohl's. And then I was like, I don't know fucking anything about Kohl's. It's a major corporation. I bet it's bad, right?
Yeah.
Just Google, like, Kohl's is Kohl's. Go ahead.
I had to support Prime because I just watched all of Invincible season 3.
Oh, sure. Yeah, is it good?
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's good stuff. Not as, like, moving forward enough with the plot, but there are some really good moments with it.
I am really interested in how they have sort of changed that plot around and made it work for TV, because the things I've seen, just the clips I've seen of what's the guy's name? The big guy who comes to Earth to fuck shit up.
Conquest.
I mean, that's like deep into like the second compendium. Do you know what I mean?
How many compendiums are there?
3.
Interesting.
You don't have to spoil it, but like when he shows up, it's a very, very big deal. Like some bad stuff happens when Conquest shows up.
So again, without too many spoilers on it, there is like a big, like almost end world, multi-dimensional issue that happens with a bunch clones.
Yeah, okay, yep.
Which lasted like an episode and a half, which is like, I felt like this was much longer, but, and then like immediately after during the cleanup, Conquest shows up.
Yes, that's how it happens in the comics, where it's just like, they're like licking the wounds of like who fucking died, like who is around, and then it's like, oh my gosh, this guy who we can't even.
Yeah.
But here's what I really liked about it. I mean, like, the show was good. Like, I watched the second season. I liked it. But what I think is just so cool about that first season is, like, the note it ends on, where it's kind of like, who Cecil is like, this was one of them. And this was one of them who was pulling his punches. And we gave him literally every single thing we had. And someone's coming back eventually. And like that is just such a freaky, like, what do you do kind of situation, you know?
Yeah.
I like it. I think it's cool.
Yeah, I love it. Like, it's great TV. I'm excited for the next season to come out a year and a half from now.
good voice cast.
Yeah, excellent voice cast. And again, really good job. I think the animation in this season I was particularly happy with.
Is it better?
I feel like they upgraded it a little bit. And I didn't notice. I really like in season 2 when they make that whole joke about how they like save money in animation. Like, what a fun meta way to like just comment on that kind of stuff. And I know they did that similarly in the graphic novel, right?
It's in the comics.
Yeah.
It's in one of the first books he goes to see it. I mean, I think it's exactly the same joke where he's like, oh, actually, you know, sometimes we'll just cover everyone's mouths and you can't see it. Or like sometimes they'll just like you copy and paste the same panels for reaction and it makes it sense. And they just sit there for a second. He's like, does that work? Don't people notice? And he's like, no, not really.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. Last thing here in the news is there's a Persona 4 remake that seems like it's coming down the line at some point
Should be coming around the mountain.
This has been rumored for a while. I've seen people talking about it, but apparently some internet domain was registered in Japan or something like that. And it mirrors exactly sort of how the Persona 3 Reload was revealed and the timeline for that. So it seems like there is... I think that this is pretty credible. I mean, it's one of those things that just makes sense. They did Persona 3 Reload. Go ahead and do Persona 3, four, you know, rewind, whatever you want to call it.
It's going to be called Persona 4.
And it's all about golfing.
Yeah.
And Joel and Ellie and Abby.
Oh, can't wait to watch that in April.
It's coming up quick, huh? I actually have decided I'm going to watch all of it for a video idea that I had. Yeah, so I think that'll be kind of interesting.
By the way, the gold points program officially ended today, March 25th, 2025.
Huge. Do you have those left over or did you use them?
I used them. Well, the ones I got from buying the voucher are no longer good, but I used the ones I had to buy the voucher. So it's not like actually I didn't gain or lose.
if you don't gain and you don't lose, then didn't you kind of gain something?
I guess you're right.
For me, if I have a completely unremarkable day, it's a pretty good day.
I agree.
Nothing bad happened.
You got to be okay with just being content. That's Buddhism.
Right. And when you're content, you're good. So you're fine.
So like the highs and lows suck, but just being content.
Dude, the highs and lows of high school football, you know? You looked at me. Do you not know that?
Is that a reference to Friday Night Lights or your...
Riverdale.
Okay.
Have you not seen this?
No. Have you watched Riverdale?
No, just the clips out of context.
Like the ones when they suddenly get superpowers by the end of it?
Yeah, it's insane.
What the fuck is happening
basically
with that?
He ends up going to prison. Archie goes to prison for something. And he's like...
pooping on the floor in my house.
Yeah, your dog. But he's like talking with like some like... He's like a juvenile detention center. You know what I mean? And he's talking to some kid who's like a drug dealer. And they're about to fight. And he's like, you have no idea what it's like to, you know, to grow up where I grew up, to deal with what I deal with. And he goes, and you will never know the highs and lows comes with high school football. Like he says it like with his whole chat. It's amazing. Persona 4 Remake. I wrote something about it today, going up on The Gamer at some point this week. I don't know. The one like... A remake can't fix the thing that made me kind of stop playing the game, and it was Teddy the bear. Mm. Do you know? Did you play Persona 4?
I didn't
at
get
all?
Far enough to really get annoyed by Teddy, but
he gets worse. He gets way worse, and without me needing to spoil anything, he shows up more because he just becomes a character who is in every scene after a certain point. And I truly could not stand this character to the point where I was like, I've put 50 hours into this game, I'm out.
I'm done. Oh, damn.
I mean, there's other stuff going on too. If this game comes out, I would give it a shot. I like Persona. I really like Persona 3 Reload. You can't fix Teddy, right? Unless you like completely rework the character. And then at that point, like,
what if Teddy,
people are going to be mad.
What if Teddy becomes a sexy lady? But she like wears like cute glasses.
Are you talking about which character are you trying to talk about here?
Oh, I'm just trying to create a type.
Oh, I mean, they all wear little glasses in the midnight.
But not like outside of it. And then at night she takes them off and you suddenly see her blue eyes and you're like, oh my God, what's going on?
I see. And it's kind of like,
I've never felt that.
Dude, I'm actually, to be honest with you, I'm trying to remember anything about my time with Persona 4.
best one in the series.
That's the thing is like the fact that I don't like it that much makes me feel like, do I actually like Persona? Do you know what I mean? Like, am I not a Persona fan?
You are. You love 3. It was like one of your games of the year. And then
I loved 3.
You fucking loved, like, you love 2 in a series, and one of them is your favorite game of all time, almost, right?
I would say Persona 5 Royal is
your favorite game.
Yeah,
one of your favorites of all time. I think that means you like Persona. And
I suppose that's true.
You're to the point where you can be picky about which ones you like because you don't have to like blindly like it just because it's Persona.
Yeah. And I'll say this, the like 10 hours or 15 hours or so I played of Persona 3 Portable, I did like quite a bit.
Yeah. And what about the one you played, you reviewed?
Scramble.
Yeah.
Oh, Tactics one.
Yeah,
Tactica.
Yeah.
I like
you,
that one.
You love that
cute.
One. Oh, and then the one when you're like sitting there in the swimsuits.
What's that?
It's like the Musou kind of look one, right?
Or my okay. The Scramble.
Hey, oh, that's Scramble. Scramble.
Yeah. Tactica was the name of the other one. Strikers.
Was
the name. Scramble is. Oh gosh, I sound like such a fucking dweeb. Scramble
was
what it was called.
You're not a fan. You called it Scramblers.
Persona 5 Scramble was what it was called in Japan.
Oh, okay. You're actually so much of a fan. You played it in Japanese.
Gosh,
didn't know what the fuck they were saying.
Dweeb, I am. Oh my gosh.
How did you make that mistake, dude?
Oh, that's embarrassing. That's on a podcast.
It's forever.
That's recorded
forever.
Oh my gosh.
It's forever.
That's embarrassing. But the thing is, everyone's like, oh, Persona 4 is the best one in the series. And I've also heard that people say, like, your favorite Persona is going to be the first one that you play.
Metaphor.
And I think that's fair for a lot of game series. I like kind of really didn't get anything out of Persona 4. I would be interested, like I said, in a remake to see what they do and this, that, whatever. Maybe I'll like that more, but I don't know. Like I struggle to even really recall much about it.
I remember how bored I was playing the first 5 hours of it.
I spent a lot of time chilling with that fucking girl that you live with, Nanako. She's just like depressed watching TV all the time. Hey. Her dad's like a cop. Her dad's like trying to like, who's doing all these murders? He's like chain smoking cigarettes and he comes home and Nanako's like, did you make dinner? And he's like, no, I forgot. He's like, oh my gosh, this sucks. This is so sad. the only joy she gets is singing the theme song to the fucking Walmart. Like, Judas. Oh my gosh. Yeah, yeah. I think that's going to do it for us. I'd like to tell our listeners they can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. They can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jay Nolan, GKS, and Josh Durham. If you can't support us there, that's fine. You can rate this episode in your podcast player of choice or I guess follow us on Twitter. Like I said, I think I should just make a blue sky. It's been a rough few weeks for me personally. Interpersonally, I haven't had the time. I'll do it. I'll do it eventually. And you can find us there. It'll be at Hitbox Pod, I imagine. Justin, am I forgetting anything here?
You're not. But whenever I think of the Junas song, I think of 773-202.
It does sound like that.
Boop, 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 boop.
Boop, 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 boop.
Junas.
I see. Okay, I like that. Yeah, that's going to do it for us. We'll catch you next week. Always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye. I'll stop recording.